Manila Chan. You are tuned in to Modus Operandi, the show that dives deep into global foreign policy and international relations to examine their methods and patterns and its history that reverberates in our lives today. All right, so they claim to be nonpartisan, benign nonprofits that assist nations or promote a cause. Oftentimes, they claim to promote democracy and other humanitarian causes. But most importantly, the NG part of the acronym NGO, non-governmental, implies there are no ties to any particular government. Today, we'll explore whether NGOs are really just a Trojan horse. All right, let's get into the MO. In the 21st century, public perception is key to achieving policy goals of any government in any country on the planet, including those of foreign policy agendas. Now, Noam Chomsky and Edward S. Herman, in their seminal 1988 book, Manufacturing Consent, examined how media helps shape public perception and ultimately achieve a government's policy objectives. Chomsky said this, quote, propaganda is to democracy what violence is to totalitarianism. And that was in 1988. Today, governments rely heavily on social media influencers, the media itself, and more subversely, on non-governmental organizations, or NGOs for short. Now, able to do and perform tasks that are politically risky or flat out antithetical to international law, NGOs have the ability to skirt around such inconveniences and nuisance. After all, they are not a part of any government, right? Wrong. All right, sort of. NGOs, as their name implies, are not technically a part of any branch of government, at least not here in the U.S. However, the caveat is, oftentimes, at least for these American ones, these NGOs take in a tremendous amount of funding directly from the U.S. government. Now, take, for example, the NED. NED is the National Endowment for Democracy. Now, NED says they are, quote, an independent nonprofit foundation dedicated to the growth and strengthening of democratic institutions around the world. Cool, that sounds great. They use words like democracy, scholars, activists, human rights, freedom. They give out grants, free money, to promote all this good stuff. But keep reading, and NED tells you right there, funded largely by the U.S. Congress. Its founding in 1983 garnered bipartisan support stateside, one of the rare instances the American political duopoly publicly agree. And it's through the private nonprofit NED that the U.S. pours billions of dollars into these NGOs, chief among them the NDI and the IRI, the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute, respectively, and George Soros's massive network of various NGOs, such as his Open Society Foundations. So in effect, NGOs often serve as a means to launder state money to achieve various political outcomes of target nations or groups. It's an indirect way for governments to affect change and shape public opinion without really having to get their hands dirty. But that doesn't mean they don't leave fingerprints. To learn more about the inner workings of NGOs, we'll be joined by someone who has had to work directly with them in various corners of the world. Francis Boyle is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois and has served as counsel to nations such as Bosnia-Herzegovina and the Provisional Government of the Palestinian Authority. Professor, good to see you. Thank you for joining us on this seemingly benign topic. But it's also a very opaque one. Let's take, for example, USAID. That began in the 1960s. It's America's main and official soft power agency. Now, since then, other official agencies such as NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, and branches beneath that have sprung up as well. They put tens of millions of dollars into groups known as NGOs. Why do this? Why not run programs directly through official government agencies or government channels?
Well, first, let's start with USAID. It's a well-known front organization for the Central Intelligence Agency. As a matter of fact, I had lunch once. A friend of mine who was a former director of USAID when it was an independent agency and a lawyer. And I asked him about penetration of USAID by the Central Intelligence Agency. And he just sort of smiled and he said, there were so many spooks in my organization, I lost track of them. So that's USAID for you. You have to understand they're a covert arm, open arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now that got kind of embarrassing, of course. So that became well known in the CIA and color revolutions and everything else. So they decided to sort of outsource it, greenwash it, whatever you want to call it, by the National Institute for Democracy and the Republican Institute. In all honesty, I really don't know why foreign governments permit. The real question here, why do foreign governments permit NED and the Republican Institute to operate in these foreign countries for the purpose of destabilizing them? And if they don't do what the United States government tells them to do, to prepare color revolutions. Certainly now, finally, Russia has smartened up and realized what the agenda here is and has adopted a new law cracking down on these NGOs and the rest of them. And I notice India has. That's good, but what about the rest of the world? I mean, we Americans know full well what's going on. These are matters of public record over here that experts in my field, international law and international human rights law, know all about.
Are NGOs an American phenomenon, or do they exist for other countries around the world as well?
Most of them, I haven't sat down and done a statistical study. Most of them come out of the United States, but then you have Britain with Amnesty International, France, Médecins Sans Frontières. But basically, they are, I would say, white racist, Western imperialist governments that view NGOs as so-called soft power and cutouts to engage in their foreign policy by other means.
So in the early 2000s, there was significant growth of NGO activity across Latin America. Between 2002 and 2012, that decade saw some $100 million dumped into Latin America by NGOs, especially in Ecuador and Venezuela. That money was used to fund opposition groups and stand up new organizations that were seemingly against the socialist leaders of that time. What impact did this have in Latin American politics? And does this equate to, election interference?
Well, yeah, let's just take what happened there in Venezuela by itself, where all these Western NGOs went in there to destabilize Chavez and then Maduro, because they were pursuing a foreign policy independent of the United States of America and trying to use their massive oil wealth for the benefit of their own people. So they sicked the NGOs on Venezuela. And to a lesser extent, the same thing was done to Ecuador, because they were not towing the United States of America imperial line. Sure. You have to understand on these NGOs, they all operate on the principle, he who pays the piper calls the tune. There's nothing independent about them. It all depends, you know, who is giving them the money, because, you know, you get what you pay for. People don't just give money to NGOs out of the goodness of their heart. They expect payback. And, you know, some of these NGOs get funneled, get paid for by U.S. government cutouts. So, again, you just see certainly American NGOs, other Western NGOs being used as instruments of foreign policy, a cutout, as it were, front organizations by their own governments. And then second, you have to understand many of these NGOs are infiltrated by Western intelligence agents and assets.
Now, it's worth noting that since the mid-2010s, a number of nations have moved to pass laws more tightly regulating how foreign NGOs can operate in their respective countries. Israel's Knesset approved a controversial 2016 law that mandates financial reporting requirements for NGOs that receive most of their funding from foreign governments. Now, critics argued this targets humanitarian groups, but Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister at the time, said this of the aim of the law. He said, quote, to prevent an absurd situation in which foreign states meddle in Israel's internal affairs by funding NGOs without the Israeli public being aware of it. Russia and China have also introduced and passed similar NGO legislation in their own countries as well. So when we return, we'll take a look at just how easy it is to launch an NGO and its impacts within America's own borders. We'll continue the conversation with Professor Boyle when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
What we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense?
Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Волинь — это особая территория на Украине. Территория, все время находящаяся так или иначе под контролем противоборствующих сил, к 1939 году поляки составляли примерно 15-20% населения Волыни.
Когда был атак на Союз Советский, в том же атаку również брали уже два батальона украинских националистов.
Морды массовые, подчас которых нищено целое все Волынское, распочались в лютом 1943 года.
Они верили в то, что таким образом они движутся к созданию украинского государства независимого, моноэтничного, такого, какое они хотели видеть.
Українських націоналістів, тобто власне донців публікував, там вже не завагався доконати жодної зброї на своїм противнику, якщо того вичерпав добру України. І це є огромна просьба своєї життєвості.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
We're pulling back the veil on NGOs and what some call a second CIA. Professor Francis Boyle is continuing the conversation with us now. Professor Boyle, American NGOs not only influence opinion beyond U.S. borders, within the U.S. itself, according to a 2021 report by the State Department, some 1.5 million NGOs operate here inside the U.S. Is their function the same stateside as it is overseas?
To a great extent, it is. You have to, again, be very careful. Who is paying for these NGOs? Where did they come from? What is their agenda? Soros has put large amounts of money into NGOs to promote his own agenda. Some people agree with Soros' agenda. I have problems with some of it. But to give you an example here, a prominent NGO I've worked with, the American Civil Liberties Union. I joined the ACLU when I was 10 years old. I had read of a case they won on civil rights for African Americans. So I took $5 out of my allowance and I sent them a note saying, I'm only 10 years old, but I saw your case and here's $5. I hope you can make me a member. And they sent me a membership certificate. So I haven't been, continuously a member for all those years, but when I moved, I've worked with the ASCU over the years, and then I moved out here to the University of Illinois in Champaign and was actively involved in the Champaign County ACLU, and then it turns out that the president of the Champaign County ACLU launched an internet character assassination campaign accusing me of being anti-Semitic. And he sent this to Jewish people, one of whom was a friend of mine, and responded and reprimanded, saying, Boyle isn't anti-Semitic, but he is as critical of Israel as I am. So you have to, this was the ACLU, so I didn't renew my membership, but you have to understand here in the United States, large numbers of NGOs like the ACLU are paid for by Zionist sources. You have Zionists on their board of directors, Zionist officials, Zionist gatekeepers, and anything that is objectionable to the Zionist agenda is killed right away. That was my experience with having been dealt with Amnesty International for the years I was dealing with them and other organizations. So they all have an agenda, right?
Now, you say Zionist as it pertains to the ACLU. Can you explain that to us a little bit more?
Right. Well, I use Zionist to distinguish it from Jewish because, as you saw, the only reason I found out about this ACLU internet character assassination campaign by the Zionist president of the ACLU in Champaign County was that he sent it to a Jewish friend of mine who was not a Zionist and reprimanded him. And, there are many Jewish people who aren't Zionists. Zionists, fully support this criminal apartheid regime in Israel and do everything they can to oppose those of us here in the United States who work against Israel and support the Palestinians. I mean, over the years, I've supported the Palestinians since I entered Harvard in 1971, when Palestinians were treated like lepers. And Zionists since then have accused me of being, everything but a child molester and have blackballed, blacklisted me, censored me. You wouldn't believe the stuff that's going on. And, that NGOs that are heavily influenced by Zionists won't work with me for that reason. So, okay, fine. What can I do?
The State Department says it's relatively easy to stand up an NGO, that it can be accomplished within just a few days. Political NGOs, they receive special limited tax exemptions. Many other types actually qualify for a full tax-exempt status, both by state and federal taxes. So given the perks and relative ease to launch one of these, are NGOs sometimes exploited as a means for some to enrich themselves?
Well, I've pointed out, you know, Amnesty International, my experience there is that one of their main objectives was to raise as much money and as much members as possible. So, yes, and you do have staff members and especially officials who have pretty good salaries. Yeah. For these NGOs. I'm not, you know, necessarily saying anyone's stealing money, but high level staff people and executive directors in these NGOs are very well paid, many of them, yes. And the reason why it's so easy to set up these NGOs, I used to be a tax lawyer before I became a law professor. The United States government understands full well these NGOs are a tool of soft power for American foreign policy. I mean, if you look at the NGOs, like, again, Amnesty, they've always considered themselves to be sort of the loyal opposition to the United States government. And, you know, they're happy to go to bat against the official designated enemies of the United States government. But, you know, when it comes to the United States government, they sort of pussyfoot around. What can I say? I'll give you an example. I've done some pro bono work for the American Indian Movement going back to 1992. I was there at their request. I was the special prosecutor of the United States government in San Francisco Tribunal for inflicting international crimes against indigenous people and people of color here in the United States, which that's exactly when I first got involved in dealing with American Indian issues. So Amnesty International launched a big campaign on behalf of indigenous people all over the world. Okay, so they sent me this camp. I was still on the board at the time. They sent me the campaign literature that was going out all over the world. And guess what? They said absolutely nothing in there on the genocidal plight of indigenous people here in the United States and Canada. Not a word. And I've worked up in Canada for what they call First Nations up there. Not a word. What do you do? It's just, there it is.
What about the checks and balances of the money? Where does it all go? How do we know exactly what happens to it?
We don't know. It's like a black hole. You really don't know where the money goes, where it comes from. I was on the Amnesty board for 4 years, and you know, we got a budget. I think it was like $30 million. There it was. But they didn't get into explaining to us who gave us this money. But I was too busy doing human rights work to sit there and say, you know, I'd like to see the books. I don't know if they would have showed them to me, to tell you the truth. Instead, I used to be a tax lawyer. I worked at a big corporate law firm in Boston doing tax, international tax litigation. So I never said, well, show me the books. But, you know, I guess who knows? We just got a raw figure. Here's the amount of money. Here's what we're planning to do with it. But exactly where it came from, I don't know. And I didn't have time to require and sit down there and go through the accounting books. And I don't know if they would have given it to me.
Now, in your opinion, which NGOs are the most influential and who runs them? Maybe, you know, rattle off the top two or three.
Well, right. I've already discussed the International Committee of the Red Cross and Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. That's all Soros money. Although I do want to say that Ken Roth, who is stepping down as the executive director of Human Rights Watch, I've worked with, and I have respect for Ken Roth, but it is Soros money. And then the ACLU here in the United States, I've already discussed that with you. So those are the ones I've worked with. Center for Constitutional Rights in New York. They're outstanding, fearless group of lawyers and dedicated staff people.
Iran is a contentious topic for the U.S. right now. What are the hallmarks of NGO destabilization? Do you see any of that there?
Well, I think on Iran, we have to understand that the United States government has been waging economic warfare against Iran for many years. This is for the purpose of producing the type of opposition we're seeing to the Iranian people. And yes, if you read the news media, you'll see NGOs jumping in on this. Sure, there was a big article, I guess, in the New York Times saying, well, the United States government should be getting involved in here and assisting the, I'm sure there is definite sources of opposition to the current government in Iran. I'm not here to delegitimize any of that, but all this is basically interference in the domestic affairs of foreign states that technically it is illegal under international law. But these Western NGOs parroting the United States, Britain, France, like to use the cause of either human rights or democracy because it sounds good, it gets the money, and they sound like do-gooders, where, in fact, it's not just Iran, but other governments, third world, they're destabilizing, like Venezuela. It's a pattern.
Professor Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois, thank you so much for sharing your insight and expertise with us today. All right, so it would appear that where diplomacy fails and sanctions just aren't enough, stand up an NGO and send it over to spread democracy. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.